So we are holding on Kuf Chaf Aleph on the days, the two lines from the bottom. Okay. Talking about the division of Eretz Yisrael, as we've been doing the last couple of days. Eretz Yisrael, the Shvatim Iflug, was Eretz Yisrael divided based on the Shvatim? Adum al-Kartuf Gavri Iflug, or was it divided based on the number of people? Meaning, so that Ashbam understands the question as follows. Do we say that Eretz Yisrael was divided into 12 equal portions, one for each Shevet? Or do we say that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on the number of people in each Shevet? So a larger Shevet is going to have a larger territory. So we touched on this the other day. And actually, on the Chumash, and then on the Pesukim in Parshas Pinchas, Rashi and the Ramban disagree on what the actual thing was. So again, the Rashbam understands over here the Shvatim Yispalag, which is going to be the Gemara's conclusion over here, that it was divided based on the Shvatim, not based on the number of people. The Rashbam over here understands that it means, in other words, each Shevet received an exactly equal portion. We're going to see soon, not necessarily equal in size, but equal in the value of the land. We're going to talk about that. But not that it was done based on the number of people in the Shevet, but rather that it was done based on the value, on the respective values of the land. As opposed to Rashi on the, and the Ramban loan similarly over there, that basically each Shevet had an equal size portion, subject again to the question of how valuable the land is. Rashi over there understands that not. Rashi on the Pesukim over there understands that it means that actually the Eretz Yisrael was divided into unequal portions, that a larger Shevet got a larger portion, a smaller Shevet got a smaller portion. So how would he understand our Gemara over here, which ends up saying the Shvatim Iflug? So different mechoshim of different possibilities how Rashi might understand it. First of all, Rashi is not obligated to explain the pasuk according to the maskana of the Gemara over here. Sometimes you find that Rashi mentions that Rashi explains the pasuk not according to the final halacha or whatever, just because it's more straightforward. But besides that, also the Ravid has an understanding of our Gemara, that the Gemara's basic question is, this that we're going to say soon, that Eretz Yisrael was divided based on a Gerdol and Urim Betumim and the whole nine yards, was that done only per Shevet? So in other words, there was a Gerdol done, that Shevet Yehuda should get their portion in such and such a place. But when it came to each person or each family within Shevet Yehuda getting their individual plot of land, that was just done by the individual Batidim, or that was done by Beis Din or whatever. Or was each person's individual plot also given out by Urim V'Tumim and Gerdol and all? So according to Rashi, according to the Ravid, that's the question of the Gemara over here, and Rashi on the pasuk conceivably could understand the question the same way.
We're going to get to that.
The Gemara is going to talk about that. Wait.
Good. Did we know it was...
No, it wasn't known yet. It wasn't known yet, but wait, we'll get to it. Okay. So, the basic question is, again, was it divided based on Shvatim or was it divided based on people? Tashma, Bein Rav L'Ma'at. Come on, prove you the Pasuk says that Eretz Yisrael is to be divided. Bein Rav L'Ma'at, whether small or large. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says, the implication of the Pasuk is that you're going to have a Shevet where people's individual portions are going to be smaller because the Shevet is larger, and since each Shevet gets an equal size portion according to the Rashbam, then it means that people, for example, from a more numerous Shevet, let's say Yehuda, are going to get smaller plots of land than a less numerous Shevet, like let's say Binyamin. If we understand the pasuk that way, Bein Rav L'Ma'at, some Shvatim are getting, members of some Shvatim are getting larger portions, some are getting smaller portions, that implies the Shvatim, that implies Eretz Yisrael must have been divided based on the Shvatim. Again, according to the Rashbam, that would mean that each Shevet got the same size portion, and therefore people in a more numerous Shevet had smaller portions, had smaller individual plots of land. Hey, that's one proof. V'oid Tanya, and besides that, we learn in a Brasa. This is a long braisa, and we're going to get to the point at the end of it. But first, we'll go through the entire braisa. Actually, the point is going to be at the beginning of the braisa, but we're going to go through all through the whole braisa, which is going to explain. Asida Eretz Yisrael shitishalik l'shloisha osir shvatim. In the future, in Mashiach's time, Eretz Yisrael will be divided into 13 shvatim. Not literally 13 shvatim. Really, what it means is 13 sections, 13 equal size sections. We'll talk about it soon. Asida means when Mashiach comes. Yeah. Shabatchilah lo nischalka lo l'shnei matzah shvatim, because originally Eretz Yisrael was only divided for 12 among 12 shvatim. Now, we're going to see soon that the 13th, we're going to see soon who the 13th portion goes to, but you have actually an interesting argument over here between the Rashbam and the Ram. The Rashbam holds that La'asid Lavoi, you're going to have Shevet Levi is going to receive a regular size portion in Eretz Yisrael, like any of the other Shvatim. What about the fact that there's only 12 Shvatim? Manasseh and Ephraim will receive portions together. They'll instead of having, like in the original division of Eretz Yisrael, where Manasseh has their section and Ephraim has their section, La'asid Lavoi, in Mashiach's time, it's actually going to be that the two of them are going to have one single section, and Levi is going to have a section of their own.
So we could say that any Shevet could be combined.
No, because we know Manasseh and Ephraim are from Yosef. On the other hand, the Ram argues with that because he says, if you look at the Pesukim in Yechezkel, at the end of Sefer Yechezkel, where he describes this whole concept, he mentions specifically over there that Manasseh and Ephraim are going to have strips of their own, are going to have portions of their own. So it can't be. And he mentions over there how the Levim are going to have an area to live in between Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash. So not like the Rashbam is saying. So therefore, he understands that no, it means that the 12 Shvatim are going to be the same 12 Shvatim who originally got portions in Eretz Yisrael, meaning Manasseh and Ephraim separate portions, Levi no separate portions. They're just going to have that area of theirs similar to the Arim Miklat. What about the Gemara is going to quote soon a pasuk that mentions there's an individual gate for each Shevet. That actually, the Yad Ramah explains that there's going to be 12 gates of Yerushalayim, each one named for a Shevet, and one of them is named for Yosef, and one of them is named for Levi. What that means, the Yad Ramah says, is that each Shevet will have the same portion in the city of Yerushalayim. The city of Yerushalayim will be divided into a way that Levi has their own section of Yerushalayim. But as far as Eretz Yisrael in general, that's going to be like the Ram says, that Levi will not have a portion of their own, and Manasseh and Ephraim will have several ones. Okay, so who the 13th portion is for, we're going to talk about soon. But anyway, continues the Braisa. You should know, when Eretz Yisrael was originally divided among the Shvatim, it was divided only based on monetary value. Now, it sounds like that means, in other words, that if one particular Shevet has a more fertile area of Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have to compensate the ones who got less fertile areas. We're going to see soon about that. Shenema ben rav lamaot, because the pasuk says whether a little or a lot. Meaning, in other words, that you have to figure out to anybody who has ziburis, anybody who has lower quality land, which is called ma'at, because it produces less crops, is going to need to be compensated by those who have rav, by those who have a greater portion. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, and Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue, he's coming to the Rashbam says, otherwise it would say Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Amar Rabbi Yehuda implies that he's coming to add, he's coming to amplify what the Tanakhama is saying. So Rabbi Yehuda shav chamash se'in begolil. You should know that one sa'ah of grain in Yehuda, in the south of Eretz Yisrael, is equal to 5 sa'ah in the Galil. So therefore, so Shevet, specifically Shevet Yehuda, Shimon, whatever, who winds up in the south of Eretz Yisrael, is going to have to compensate the ones who wind up in the north of Eretz Yisrael, where the land is less fertile, or maybe not the land is less fertile, but the crops there are less nutritious, or whatever. You know, there's a Gemara at the end of Sukkot that points out that the why 5, because from one saw of grain, you could get, what was it, you could get a saw of fine flour, a saw of coarse flour, a saw of bran, etc. So the grain there was much higher quality at the point. Okay. And you heard it. Okay. Continues the Braisa. Now, Eretz Yisrael was only divided by a girdle. Shenema, ach begirdle, because the pasuk says only by a girdle, only by a lottery, Eretz Yisrael should be divided. Eber Yarden, we're not, on the face of it, Eber Yarden is not counted because Moshe personally assigned the Shvatim to their portions over here. But we're going to see soon when we talk about that there were 12 pieces of paper with the names of the Shvatim and 12 pieces of paper with the names of the territories. On the face of it, that includes the Shvatim in Eber Yarden, which leads some of the Mephoshim to say that, yes, even though Reuben and Gad and half Manasseh had already been assigned their portions by Moshe, still it was required, it was a Gzeiras HaKosov, the Eibishter wanted, still that nevertheless it should be reassigned to them by a girdle. As we're going to see, the whole girdle took place with Ruach HaKodesh. The whole thing took place in general. I mean, we talked about last week the idea that a girdle in general is something that is something directed by Hashem, and the expression of the Goyim that says that a person who goes against a girdle is like someone who violates the Aseret HaDibros. By the way, I'm sorry, you're new here. I'm not sure if I'm using any terminology or any wording or whatever that you're not familiar with. Please speak up.
Okay.
All right. So I came across afterwards, by the way, at CISO, where that explains the deeper connection between those two things, the girdle and the ascendibris, because he explains the different aspects of Torah. We have the aspects of Torah that each person has their own unique portion in it, the same as Halkeinu v'Sotah Sefer. And you have the aspect of Torah, which is like a girdle where we all share it in equally. We all have an equal chance at it, specifically the Aseret HaDibros, which was given collectively to the Jewish people. So therefore, now the Aseret HaDibros really have a close connection with a girdle. Anyway, so the point is, Eretz Yisrael was divided by girdle. Shenema asked the girdle. V'leneschauke ela b'urim v'tumim, however, continues the Braisa, however, it was only divided based on urim v'tumim. In other words, they would ask the urim v'tumim, and they would get an answer which shevet it's supposed to be in which portion. Shenema al pi ha-girdle, because the pasuk also says, according to the girdle. Al pi, the Rashbam says the word al pi implies the urim v'tumim. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, why? Because there's a different pasuk that mentions al pi v'yesu, al pi v'yavoyu, referring to a lazer wearing the urim v'tumim. So we see that the word al-pi refers to the Urim v'Tumim. Rashi on the Pasuk also mentions over there, based on a medrash, that the word al-pi has another meaning as well. It means after they picked each girdle, the girdle itself, the piece of paper itself, would yell out and say, I am the girdle for Shevet so-and-so. Okay, and so that everybody would know that it really was legitimate. Anyway, so Kesad, so how does this work? What do you mean? Is it based on Urim v'Tumim, or is it based on girdle? It worked like this. Elazar Malubish Urim B'Tumim, Elazar the Kohen Gadol, was standing over there wearing the Urim B'Tumim. The Yeshua B'Chol Yisrael Omnim L'Fonav, Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people are standing in front of him. B'Kalpi Shal Shvatim, B'Kalpi Shal Tchumim Menachem L'Fonav. And then, in front of Elazar, or maybe in front of Yeshua, there's sitting over there a box.
Elazar
HaKohen, the son of Aaron. Yes, he was the Kohen Gadol after Aaron HaKohen, yeah. So in front of him, there is a box that contains 12 pieces of paper that have the names of the Shvatim, the Kalbishot Chumen, and also another box that has the general areas of Eretz Yisrael, the general regions of the names of the regions of Eretz Yisrael, Munachon Lefanav, that are placed in front of him. So now what happened is that. So Elazar would know by Ruach HaKodesh, meaning that first he would ask the Urim V'Tumim. First he would ask the Urim V'Tumim which one is going to come up next, and the Urim V'Tumim would flash the answer. And then they would do the girdle. This way everybody knows that the girdle was really legitimate. Then they would pick up a piece of paper, right? Because this way everybody will know that the lottery, the girdle, is legitimate, and nobody's gonna have any problems. Maybe it was, you know, he looked in and then picked the next one or whatever. You know, this way everybody knows that it's on the up and up. Piece of paper, parchment, pigskin is the expression that the Rashbam uses, meaning notes, like slips, you might say, slips of paper, slips of parchment, whatever, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so like this. So again, so he would ask the Urim V'Tumim, and then with Ruach HaKodesh, because the Kohen Gadol needed Ruach HaKodesh to interpret the answer of the Urim V'Tumim, he would say that the next girdle that's going to come up is, for example, the Omer, and he would say, Zvulun Oyler, the next girdle that is going to come out is, for example, Zvulun. Tchum Akoy Oyler Imoy, and when we pick from the box that contains the names of the regions, the region of Akoy is going to come up to go to him, and that's going to be the one that goes to Zvulun. Technically, Tosfos points out that actually the city of Akoy itself went to Shevet Asher. So therefore, we don't mean actually the city of Akko itself. We mean the region surrounding Akko, the coastal plain of that part of Eretz Yisrael, which ended up being Zvulun's portion. The Rosh brings that actually Rabbeinu Tam had Taka changes the Girsa in the Gemara over here, that he has the Girsa not Zvulun but Asher in order to make that fit, because Asher actually did.
Asher also was on the coast.
Asher was on the coast, but they specifically had the city of Akko, yeah. Zvulun was also further inland. Zvulun also had part of the present-day Galil, the area of Miron, for example. He had Zvulun, yeah. Okay. All right. Sure enough, Tarach B'Kalpi shall Shvatim behel v'ol b'yad Zvulun. Sure enough, then, whoever's in charge over there would mix up the slips of paper in the box of Shvatim and pull out the one that says Zvulun. Tarach B'Kalpi shall Tchumen v'ol b'yad Tchumaka. And he would reach into the, he would mix up the ones in the box of Tchumen and come out with the one that says the region of Akka. So it would fit exactly with what the Urim V'Tumim had said and what Elazar had said based on his Ruach HaKodesh to interpret what the Urim V'Tumim said. V'chozer v'chamin Ruach Kodesh. Next comes the division for the next Shevet. He would he'd say it was Ruach Kodesh again after asking the Urim V'Tumim. V'Omer, and he'd say the next one Naphtali Ola. Next, that's going to come out of the box of Shvatim is Naphtali, or Tchum Ginoisa Ola Imo, and then the one that's going to come up with him is the area of Ginoisa, which is the area near the Kinneret, the lower Galil, the area of Tveria, for example, other cities in that area which belong to Naphtali. Sure enough, Torah Fakalpi Shal Shvatim, he'd mix up the box of the Shvatim, Va'ola B'yadi Naphtali, and pull out the paper that says Naphtali, Torah Fakalpi Shal Tchum, and Va'ola B'yadi Tchum Ginoisa. V'chein kol shevet v'shevet, and so it went with each shevet. So they did. So that's how they had by Urim v'Tumim as well as by Gur. Okay, continues the Braisa. V'loy kachaluka shel olam hazeh, chaluka shel olam haba. Now we said before that originally Eretz Yisrael was divided for 12 shvatim, and La'asid Lava is going to be divided into 13 portions. So, but there's going to be another difference. The division in olam hazeh, the division that was done by Yeshua and Elazar and whatever, is not going to be like the division chaluka shel olam haba. It's not going to be like the division in the world to come. And the world to come, olam haba, has many different meanings. It means the world of neshamas that people's neshamas go to after they die. It means the times. It means the period of Mashiach when we live as neshamas in bodies. It includes there's a lot of different meanings when we get to Sanhedrin. Bez Hashem, we'll talk about it. That we'll hopefully have time to talk about the various meanings that the Rishonim assign the word Olam Haba. Here, obviously, the Yad Ramah points out. Obviously, we must mean Olam Haba in the sense of the period when we're neshamas in bodies. The times of Mashiach, but the period of it, within it when we're neshamas in body, because obviously it's not relevant to talk about this when we're neshamas on. Yes. Even before Tres Amesim, in other words, for the Jews who are alive at that time, yeah. And Chassidus talks about that once we're in bodies, once we're neshamas in bodies, we're going to remain that way forever. There's not going to be a time when there's neshamas without bodies. But again, when we get to Bez Hashem, we talk about this in the last parak of Sanhedrin, we'll hopefully have time to get into that a little bit. This is also true. Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, then we'll learn it as Teras HaShol Mashiach. Then we'll learn it on a whole different level. Okay. So the division that happened by Yeshua and Elazar and the rest of them is not like the division that's going to be in Olam Haba in the future time of Mashiach. Ha'olam hazeh, in this world, Adam yeshle sode lovan ein le sode paris. You have, for example, a person has a field of grain. He doesn't necessarily have also a field which is good for an orchard, for planting trees. Sode paris, ein le sode lovan. He may have only a place that's good for an orchard and not a place that's good for grain. Every single one will have in the mountains and in the valleys and in the plains. Tosfos points out, by the way, in the original division, Tosfos points out two possibilities. Either in the original division, each shevet had every kind of terrain, but Lo Asid Lavay, every individual will have every kind of terrain, or that, even in this world, even in the original division of Yeshua's time, fine, it could happen that a person has an area for grain and an area for trees and so forth, but not necessarily equal amounts of each. He may have more mountain and less valley, or vice versa, whereas Lost and Lover, according to this, we're saying that everybody will have an equal amount of everything. And how do we know this? Because the pasuk says in Yechezkel over there. So this where in context, this pasuk that we're going to quote is describing the gates of Yerushalayim. So it's going to be 12 gates, three on each side, each gate named for one of the Shevatim. But we're going to darshan it to refer to their areas of Eretz Yisrael. So it's Shal Reuven Echad, Shal Yehuda Echad, Shal Levi Echad. So Echad implies equal. That whatever Reuven has is exactly the same as what Yehuda is going to have, and exactly the same as what Levi is going to have. This, by the way, leads back to what we were saying before, that according to the Rashbam, Levi is going to have their own portion in Eretz Yisrael. Whereas according to the Ran, you would have to understand it, that it means similar to what the Ramah says, that everybody, that each Shevet is going to have an equal portion in Yerushalayim. But outside Yerushalayim, Levi is going to have their little area over there between the Beis Mikdash and Yerushalayim, where the other Shevatim are going to have their strips. Okay. And the Braisa finishes off. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechalek lahen ba'atzmai. The Eibishter will divide the territory among them himself. Shenema, the pasuk says, Ve'elo machlokoitam, the same pasuk in Yechezkel there says, these are the divisions, Ne'um Hashem. So says Hashem, meaning that Hashem himself will do the division. And by the way, Marsha points out, that means, therefore, that division will last forever. unlike the division that was done by Elazar and Yeshua, they were doing with Ruach HaKodesh, they're doing with the Urim and Thummim, all fine and good. They themselves, after all, are human beings. And what human beings do is not necessarily something eternal. It eventually dissipates.
Why does it have to change?
Because a human being is not an eternal creature. Fine, the Urim and Thummim, but still, it was done via Elazar and his Ruach HaKodesh and Yeshua. Whereas loss of love, it's going to be done directly by the Eibishter. And so just as the Eibishter is eternal, so the division of Eretz Yisrael and the ownership of Eretz Yisrael by the Jewish people is going to be eternal at that time.
No, or something.
Without not meeting her, yeah. Okay, so that was the whole b'raisa then. So, katani miyas, the bottom line, to get back to our question, was Eretz Yisrael divided according to the Shvatim or according to the individual people? Katani miyas, the bottom line is, the b'raisa said near the beginning, Shebetchilo lo niskalka lo l'shnei matzah Shvatim, that originally Eretz Yisrael was divided only among the 12 Shvatim. Shema min ol Shvatim, that goes to show that the original division was based on Shvatim. Again, according to not individuals. Again, according to the Rashbam and the Ramban, it means that each Shevet got an equal portion. Again, not equal in size, as we're going to see soon, but equal in value. Whereas according to Rashi, on the Pasuk, it means that the Shvatim did get unequal size portion. The larger Shevet gets a larger portion, but no, not same value according to Rashi. So the larger Shevet got a larger portion, so that each person will end up with the same size land, but Rashi might understand the discussion in the Gemara here to be similar to the Ravid, that the Gemara's question is, did they do an individual girdle and Urim B'Tumim for each individual person's plot of land, or only for each Shevet? And then within that, they just divided it however the Dayanim felt was right.
So the first version is equal value for the Shevet.
The second version is equal value for each person, but the division using the Urim and Thummim and using the girdle and all that was only done for each Shevet. They didn't do it 600,000 times for the 600,000 households. They did it 12 times for the 12 Shvatim. Okay. Shmamina, good, that proves it. That was left for the Nesiim, yeah, that was left for the Nesiim, the Bat Yedinim or whatever, yeah.
To decide individually
who gets what area and whatever. Okay. Omama, we said before in the Braisa, Sida Eretz Yisrael should just call it the Shloisha of the Shvatim. We said Eretz Yisrael in the future is going to be divided among 13 Shvatim. Idoch Laman, who's the 13th portion for? There aren't 13 Shvatim, there's 12. Omar Rav Chista of Nasi. So Rav Chista says that 13th portion is going to go to the Nasi. Who is the Nasi? The Rashbam says over here it means Mashiach. The Rambam also learns similarly, because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim that Mashiach and his descendants are always going to be entitled to 1/13 of all areas that the Jewish people conquer and take over. And he gets that from these psukim. The same way as in Eretz Yisrael proper, he's entitled to 1/13 of the land, one strip out of the 13. So it is also lawful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have two portions.
Well, no, it means Yehuda, the collectively Shevet Yehuda will have one portion, and the Nasi, who is from Shevet Yehuda, will have his own. Yeah, his Ami, yeah. It's interesting, the Mahadura Bastra on Marsha, I think it's from Marsha's son-in-law or something, who has a whole explanation why we're calling him the Nasi. Why don't we just call him Mashiach then? And he has a whole explanation based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin that Lo'asid Lover, you're going to have Mashiach is going to be the actual king, and David, who's going to have to say it's a Mason, is going to be like the viceroy, like the vice king. Kesar or Paugi Kesar, the Gemara calls it over there, like the emperor and the vice emperor, sort of. So therefore, the Nasi over here, he says, means David HaMelech as opposed to Mashiach. Because Mashiach being the king, effectively the whole land belongs to him. But David being the vice king, he'll have this particular strip of land. That's how Madhura Basra wants to say. Okay, so for the Nasi. Strictly speaking, we're not talking about the whole thing is going to belong to the Nasi. You have to look in the Pesukim in Yechezkel. Actually, I printed out a map that I found online that just to give an idea of how it's going to be divided. You have a strip for each Shevet. We're not going to get into whether the borders they're showing over here are correct or the width, whatever. It gives you a general picture of how it's supposed to be. But you have the middle strip over there actually contains. You have an area set aside for the Beis Hamikdash and for the Kohanim. You have an area set aside for the Levim, and you have an area set aside for the city of Yerushalayim and the agricultural area surrounding it. So all of that is in the middle. All of that is in the middle of the Nasi strip, and then the parts on both sides, the part from the east of that till the Yaudin, or maybe further, and to the west of that till the Mediterranean and maybe further, is going to belong to the Nasi. So okay, anyway, so the Rashbam and the Rambam understand that the Nasi over here is Mashiach. Rashi on the Pesukim actually says in Yechezkel says actually means the Kohen Gadol.
Kohen cannot be a Nasi.
Why ever not? We're not going to Nasi as in he's not going to be the king of the Jewish people. Of course not. There's going to be Mashiach, no question about that. But Rashi on the Pesukim over there holds on the basis of the Pesukim that mentioned over there the Nasi bringing Karbonos, for example. So you could argue it means the king will finance the Karbonos if you say it means the Melech HaMashiach. But if it, according to Rashi, it means straightforwardly the Nasi himself will be the one to bring the Karbonos because he's a Kohen and he can do it. Okay. Anyway, so the Nasi. Yeah, so Rochitza says, well, Nasi, Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'ha'oved ha'ir, the one who works for the city, Ya'abduhu mikol shivtei Yisrael, they will serve him from all of the Shvatim. So who is the Oved ha'ir? Means the Nasi, the king, because he serves the people. A king in Jewish thought is not supposed to be just, you know, he's not lording it over the people. He's supposed to be an Eved to the people. We'll learn a famous story in Gemara Horius next year around this time, Bez Hashem, that you have a story over there involving two of the Chachamim who Rabbi Yeshua tells Rabbi Gamliel, you have Rabbi Elazar Chisma, and I forget who the other one was, that Rabbi Yeshua tells Rabbi Gamliel, you have to give them a position of importance. They could use the Parnassa. So he tries to, and they say, we don't want to be appointed to any position of importance. And he explains to them, you should know, being appointed to such a position is not going to make you leaders, it's going to make you servants to the tzibur. And then he brings this possible. So, and they accept it. So the worker of the city, meaning the Nasi, who works on behalf of the people, Ya'abduhu, we call Shivtei Yisrael, they will serve him, as in all the Shvatim, will give him a portion of land. So therefore we see it belongs to the Nasi. But a pop asked Abaya, Ema Runger Ba'alma. Maybe not. Maybe the word Ha'ovid Ha'ir just means a day laborer. Maybe it just means, in other words, that the people are going to be responsible for working for the Nasi, for Mashiach, like Talmidim work for their Rebbe. So not necessarily is he going to be receiving a portion of land from them. And in fact, Tosfos points out. From a medrash from Bereshis Rabbah, that actually the Oved Ha'ir of this pasuk has a different meaning. It means the Givonim. The Givonim, we know that they were made to work on behalf of the Mishkan and later on the Beis Mikdash, the water drawers and wood choppers. So the medrash says we see from this pasuk, well, Oved Ha'ir Yavdu, that even lost lover, even in Shriach time, the Givonim will still retain their status. So Tosfos says, okay, maybe you could use the word Oved in a dual meaning. It means king, but it also means the Givonim, or maybe that Medrash is arguing with our Gemara. Anyway, how do we know that the word Oved, Ha'ir, of our Pasuk, means a Nasi? The answer is Lois Sakadidach. You can't think that way, that it just means that the people are going to be working for the Nasi, but he's not going to get any land. Dichtiv, because the Pasuk continues explicitly there in Yechezkel. V'han Noser, the remaining part of that script, L'Nasi is going to be for the Nasi, Mizeo Mizeo Trumas HaKodesh, V'lachol Zaseir, from this side and from that side of the area that's designated for the Kodesh, meaning for the Beis Mikdash, and for the area of the city. So in other words, the area outside of the square over here, which again, the square is designated for Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, this white and gray square in the middle over here. That's designated for it's a square. Each of these strips, I should mention, is supposed to be the same width. The Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there, based on calculating from the pesukim, each strip is supposed to be 75 mil in width. 75 mil is around 50 miles, give or take. So here you have this area over here, square about 70. It's a square 75 by 75 mil, so about 50 by 50 miles. Which again, within it is going to be the Beis Mikdash areas for the Kohanim and Levim, areas for Yerushalayim and the agricultural land surrounding Yerushalayim. And then we're saying the remainder of that strip, L'Nasi, is going to be for the Nasi, Mizero Mizero, on this side and on this side. The remaining of that strip, yes. So again, an area 75 by 75 mil is set aside from that strip. The remainder of it is for the Nasi, Mizero Mizero, from this side and that side, L'Trumas HaKodesh, from outside of the area that's set aside for the Kodesh, meaning for the Beis Mikdash, V'lachol Zaseir, and for the area of the city. So therefore we see that, yes, the Pasuk is saying explicitly that it belongs to the Nasi, and therefore we have to understand that the word Oved Ha'ir from the previous Pasuk also means the Nasi. So it's going to belong to the Nasi. Again, whether the Nasi means Mashiach or the Kohen Gadol, that's a different issue. Okay. So that settles that. That's what we mean that Yisrael is going to be divided into 13 Shvatim. Not 13 Shvatim, literally, but 13 strips. 13 equal five strips like that. Okay. Next. We said in the Braisa, V'leniskalka elo l'ksafim, we said that Eretz Yisrael was divided only based on monetary value. Shenema bein rav l'ma'ot, as we said, between more and less, meaning that more meaning land that's worth more, and ma'at, and land that's worth less. So the question is, l'mai, for what purpose are we talking about? What do we mean by better and worse? Ilema l'shufer v'sanya, do we just mean, in other words, that some land is better quality than others, and you're going to say that a shevet that ends up with better quality land has to compensate a shevet with worse quality land by giving them extra money. Question is, are we talking about fools? Who would be so foolish as to give up, as to say, fine, I'm not going to have better quality land, but instead I'll take money. Money can easily disappear. Land is permanent. Why would anyone say, fine, so instead of getting a saw size of land in Yehuda, where the land is better quality, I'm going to get a saw size land in the Galil, and you'll just compensate me with money. That money is not going to last over the generations. Yeah. Obviously you should have to understand then that if you're going to go like that, if you're going to go based on the quality of land itself, obviously a person in Galil, for example, is going to have to get five times as much land as one in Yehuda. We said before that one saw in Yehuda is equal to five saw in Galil. So therefore, you would have to have that the Shevet Yehuda, if Shevet Yehuda is receiving X number of base saw in the south of Eretz Yisrael, then whichever Shvatim are in the Galil are going to have to receive X times five. They're going to have to receive five times as much. You can't say you compensate them with money. Nobody would be so foolish as to take up such a thing.
Of course, the Galil are obviously much greater in terms of land size.
Yes. No, rather what we're talking about is the goodness of the land as far. Now it is true, fine, that you do have to make up for somebody who gets more fertile land is going to get smaller portions. Somebody who gets less fertile land is going to get larger portions. But that's not what we're talking about. What you compensate with money to make up for that. What we're talking about, the compensation with money, is as far as distance. This brings us to what you were asking at the beginning. So if you have somebody who winds up closer to Yerushalayim, that land is worth more. Why is it worth more? Two things. Number one, it's closer to the Beis Mikdash. Number two, it means it's further away from the border, so it's less likely to be attacked by the surrounding nations. So that Ashbam says those are the two reasons. So therefore, those two considerations make land near Yerushalayim worth more. Now, you brought up the question, did they know to begin with that the Beis Mikdash was going to be built in Yerushalayim? And as a matter of fact, Ashbam Sefer asked that question. He says, based on a Gemara and Zvachim, in fact, we find they did not. It was only eventually a couple hundred years after they arrived in Eretz Yisrael. 400 years about, Shmuel and David sat down and did the research and figured out, based on the Pesukim and Yeshua, whatever, that the Beis Mikdash has to be built in Yerushalayim. So what are we talking about, closer and further to Yerushalayim? So the Chassam Sofer says, right, what we mean is, to begin with, originally they set up a Mishkan in Shiloh, further north of Yerushalayim. So therefore, at the time, the closer or further thing would have been, are you closer or further to Shiloh? Later on, when eventually, 400 odd years later, it was decided that this message was going to be in Yerushalayim, then at that point, there would have to be a further compensation. Now you have, for example, Shevet Ephraim, let's say, which previously had Shiloh is in their territory, whereas now they're further away from the Beis Mikdash. Now their land, therefore, has gone down in value because it's further away from the Beis Mikdash. Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin are going to have to compensate them the difference. That's the compensation in money that we're talking about. So in other words, there's two things. Again, there would be compensation as far as the value that some land is worth more than others because of its fertility, that you make the portions unequal.
So
out of
that area, they're getting basically land and money. So when I said to you before, if, say, for example, five, you know, the Galil is five times, they get five times more than, say, the land in Yerushalayim. So it's not that they're getting five times the land, they're getting the same size land. And the difference, the four of the five is the money from Shevet.
No. What we're saying is two things. We're saying, number one, you have to look at the fertility of the land. And for that,
I understand that.
Yes.
They're getting compensated for they're going to get five times.
They're going to get five
and
times.
And they're going to get money on top of that?
Yes, because there's two different things. Because there's the fertility of the land, for which they have to get a larger amount of land, because nobody's going to be so foolish as to take money instead of land. In fact, as money eventually disappears,
right.
Land doesn't. But on the other hand, then you have the intangible difference, the fact that this land is closer to your shalayim and therefore worth more, because on the grounds of location, 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 as real estate people say, as opposed to the area in the Galil, it's worth less on those grounds. That they would compensate for in money. That you can't compensate in a larger amount of land, because you can't really quantify that in terms of amount of land. So therefore they would do it. So therefore they did it. So therefore they did it with money. Yeah. Okay.
Level, you know what you're saying. Is this like would it ever change? Meaning, like with time, like sometimes you have this comfortable being in real estate reassessment.
Right.
Do they reassess that?
So according to the Chacham Sofer, they reassessed it when the Beit Hamikdash was moved from Shiloh to eventually to Yerushalayim.
But does that mean
to reassess
that? Does that stay permanent in terms, or is there a constant, let's say, every 50 years the land is reassessed?
No, but Pashtus not. Pashtus, it was a one-time thing. Okay. The Rashbam brings another explanation that actually when we say that a star in Yehuda is worth five star in the Galil, we don't mean because of fertility. We mean strictly because of the distance from Yerushalayim, in which case the difference is only made up with money, not with a larger amount of land. So it would be true there are areas that are more fertile and less fertile, and that would have to be dealt with as far as money, but as far as land, but not necessarily the user of Yehuda's distinction between Yehuda and Galil. Talking about fertility, it may be just as far as distance from Yerushalayim.
Meaning money.
Meaning only money compensation, not land compensation, right? Okay. The Gemara says Ketanoi. This is actually like a machlokes tanoim. This question of how the division was done. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Ksofim Herloah. Rabbi Lezer says that they figured out the difference in value between closer and further areas based on and gave cash and gave money as compensation for it. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a Kaukahel, Lord. Rabbi Yeshua says that they valued it based on the actual value of the land. So there you see. Then was it that they did compensation based on money, or was it that they did compensation based on land? So that goes back to this discussion. Then we said in the Braita, when it's Kaukah El Begorl, we said Israel was divided only by Gorl. Shenema Ach Begorl, as the Pasuk says, only by Gorl. Thomas, and now we learn in a Braisa, when it says ach v'gorl, and we know the word ach is always meant to exclude something, Yotsu Yeshua v'Kalev. That comes to teach us that there was an exception. Yeshua and Kalev did not receive their portions based on a girl. The question is, Lamai, as far as what? What do we mean, Yeshua and Kalev are accepted? Elaim de la shokul klal, do you mean to say they didn't get anything at all? We said the other day that they even got portions that didn't even originally pertain to them. We said they got the portions of the Meraglim, and according to one opinion, even the portions of Adat Kodak and the Mislonim. Of course they got their own portions that would have pertained to them being from their respective Shvatim, Yehuda and Ephraim. No, what we mean is Yeshua and Kalev were an exception to the general rule. They did not receive their portions based on a girdle. They received it by direct statement from Hashem, by direct statement from the Ur V'Tumim, who's going to get what. And how do we see this? Yeshua, because the Pasuk says, by the word of Hashem, they gave him the city that he had asked for, as Timnath Serach Bahar Ephraim, the city of Timnath Serach in the mountains of Ephraim.
What did he ask?
He asked for that specific place because whatever that he well we're gonna see on Amud Beis we're gonna see in a second there was something special about it. The question is Ksiv Serach or Ksiv Cheres. This place is mentioned in two different places. It's mentioned in Sefer Yoshua, and it's also mentioned in Sefer Shoftim when it gives a brief summary of how Yoshua passed away and then the Jewish people started worshiping Avodah Zarah and that led to all the events of the Shoftim. So it says there. So in Yoshua it calls it Timnath Serach. In Shoftim, it calls it Timnath Cheres. Amar Rabbi Elazar, but yeah. So some of the Meforshim, I think the Radak says, okay, you find sometimes names in places like that change a little bit. But the Gemara wants to find a significance in the change. What it is like this. Originally, before Yeshua settled over there, the fruit of it was like earthenware, like cheres. It was dry and hard. All of a sudden, later on, once Yeshua got it, then it got an upgrade in quality. Now, all of a sudden, the fruit is so fat and juicy that it spoils quickly. So that it spoils very quickly. The ikadamri, or another version, is that it's the other way around. If it's too juicy and it spoils quickly, that's not a good thing. You can't preserve it for very long. So originally it was the other way around, according to the second version. Originally the fruit would spoil quickly. Later on, it was like earthenware, that it wasn't too juicy. It was just as much as still juicy enough to be tasty, but still little enough that that they could preserve it for a long time, that it wouldn't spoil quickly. No, we don't mean that it was, according to the second explanation, we don't mean that it was like cheret in texture. We mean it was like cheret in that it could be preserved for a long time. Yeah. So anyway, so maybe that's why Yeshua wanted that specific place. Whatever it is, anyway, that was the place he asked for. Kolev, where do we see that Kolev received a portion based al pi Hashem and not by a girl? Just because the passage is by Yitno the Kolev of Chevron, they gave Kolev the city of Chevron, Kasha Dibre Moshe, as Moshe had spoken. Where did Moshe say that? So we learned in Sota. We learned it recently in Sota for Sira, that Kolev is the only one of the Meraglim who went to the Ma'arat Machpelah to daven over there that he should be successful, that he shouldn't be swept up in Asaf Meraglim. And Moshe says over there in Parshas Devarim that he will receive the land, Asher Dorach Ba, that he steps in it, Olavonim, and it will go to his children. That's Chevron, where only he specifically went. So Kasha Dibre Moshe, as Moshe had spoken, Vayodesh Mishamas Shlosha B'nei Hanok, and he dispossessed from there the three sons of the giant. Okay. So therefore we see that Kolev got his portion independently, without not in the usual way. Okay, the question is, Chevron Ir Miklat HaGoyim. We find that Chevron was one of the six Ori Miklat, so in that case, Kohenim lived in it. It didn't belong to Kolev. Amar Abaya Pavara. Abaya says, right, what we mean that Kolev had the city is we mean he had its suburbs, the area around it, the villages around it, the fields around it. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Vesdeir Ir Veschatira, as it says, the fields of the city and its outlying villages. Nosnul Kolev Ben Yefuna, they gave to Kolev Ben Yefuna, Bachuzotay, that would be his inheritance. That's what it was.
Chevron.
So the city of Chevron itself was an Ir Miklat, but the surrounding areas belonged to Kolev. The area where the settlers are now is the area around Maros Machpelah. The Pashtus, that was the actual city in those days. I don't know. Mishnah says, Echad Aben ve'echad Abbas
v'nachla. Yeah?
The days when they conquered Yerushalayim, we conquered Yerushalayim and Chevron. No, yeah, that's true. Okay. Mishnah says, Echad Aben ve'echad Abbas v'nachla. Sons and daughters are the same as far as Nachla. What we mean by that, we're going to talk about in the Gemara. Elosha ben notel pishnayim b'nichseav. However, a son gets a double portion from the nechasim of the father if he's a bechor. The ainu notel pishnayim b'nichseav, but he does not get a double portion from the nechasim of the mother. That we learned earlier in the parak. We said in the Gemara over there, we learned from Pasuk that the concept of bechor only applies to the nechasim of the father. Loy mishpat bechor. Loy and not law.
Very interesting. How does it work today where illegally it's joint accounts and everything?
That's a good question. I mean, yes. Bonus nizonus minichseav. Another difference is that daughters are sustained. They're given money for their food, minichseav, from the nechasim of their father. This is we're going to learn in the next parak that the Chachamim made a takana that daughters are supposed to be supported out of the estate until they get married. And we say over there that if the estate is not large enough to do that and give a Yerusha to the boys, then the girls get their mezonos and the boys don't get anything. So that's but that only applies to the father's nechasim. The ainu mezonos minichseim, they do not get their mezon from nichseim, from the nechasim of the mother. Because this is one of the tnoi ksuba. And Tanoik Suba only apply to the father's Mechasim. Obviously, they're not going to apply to the mother's Mechasim. There is, by the way, there's a Machlokas Rishonim, and it's also the Ramal that brings the two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, whether, what about, for example, things like a Nadan, things like money for the girl's clothes or whatever, does that come from Nichseim, and only Mizonis only comes from Nichseav, or maybe those things are also like Mizonis, and they only come from Nichseav? The answer is the machlokes. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My echad aben ve'echad ur." I've said many times before, you know, that when you have, I've said many times before that this is, you know, when we say hashiva shivtenu kvar shona, this is the kind of thing to have in mind. We should have back to Sanhedrin, so all these machlokes in, all these machlokes in that have been accumulating for the last 1,500, 2,000 years without any resolution can finally be resolved.
So what's the meaning of kvar shona?
Sort of like it was originally when they had a Sanhedrin. That, therefore, there was no long term machlokes. When there was a machlokes, they'd eventually go to the Beit Din HaGadol and they would decide one way or the other, and that's it. That became the halacha.
Just to bold out what you said, that means if there's parents passed away, there's an issue available. The kids don't divide it if there's girls who are not married. It technically goes into reserve and they live with it until they get married. Then after that, it's separated.
So technically, what we say is it depends whether it's called nechasim merubin or nechasim muati. If there is enough in there that we can evaluate that there'll be enough for the girls to live off till they get married, and there'll still be enough after that for the boys to divide as an inheritance, then they do that. But if not, then not. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara, what is this expression that we mean that a son and daughter are equal as far as nachla? Does that mean that they inherit together? That if a person dies and leaves behind a son and daughter, then they both inherit equally? Can't. Hutsnan, we learned previously in the parent. Ben kodin l'bas, the son comes before the daughter, and kol yosirecha shal ben kodin l'bas, and all the descendants of the son come before the daughter. So it does. They're not equal in Yerusha. So what's the answer? Simon Nasham. So we're going to have a simon for a mnemonic for the names of four Amoraim that are going to give an answer to this. And Nasham, Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, and Marbar Rav Ashi. So answer number one, Amor Rav Nachman, Kachavikar. What the Mishnah means is like this: Echad Aben ve'Echad Abas Noitzan Beroy Kivamochsev. It means that when it comes to the concept of Yarshining, what's Roy, what's not yet part of the estate but is going to be. For example, money that the father is owed for something, not a loan that he gave out. It's a different question whether that's considered roi or not. But for example, cases where there's something which we know he's eventually going to be getting compensation for something, let's say, but he hasn't received it yet. That's roi. We're saying both boys and girls. We're saying that if there's a boy who inherits, then he gets that roi just like he gets mussar. And if it's a girl who inherits, she also. As opposed to, we said that when it comes to the din of Bechura, we're going to talk about in the next couple of blasts that a Bechura does not get a double portion of Roy. But as far as the basic concept of inheritance, both boys and girls get, whichever one of them is going to be the heir, gets Roy just as much as Moshe. And the proof is that Rashbam says, we see that, for example, we learned earlier in the Perek, that let's say, for example, so you have the person who died had a son, but that son died before him, and that son left children. We say those children inherit, even though the property didn't actually, it wasn't yet mukhsas by their father, it was only roi, and we see they still inherit it. Okay. The question is Honami Taneno. Okay, but we don't need all Mishnah to tell us that. We had a previous Mishnah in our parish that said, B'noi Tzlachot Nathla Shloisha Chalakam Anachla. We said that the daughters of Tzlachot got three portions in the division of Eretz Yisrael, and one of them was Chelak Abim Shoyim Yetz Mitzrayim. One was the portion that should have gone to their father, was one of the ones who came out of Mitzrayim, V'chelkeim Echa B'nichse Chefer. And the other one is a portion that he would have gotten with his brothers in the Nechasim of Chefer, their grandfather. Now, not necessarily did Tzlachot die while... Now, not necessarily did Chefer die before Tzlachot. Tzlachot might well have died before Chefer. So that in that case, the property is Roy, and we're still saying that the girls inherited it. So we see that you can inherit if Tzlachot died before Chefer. So we see it from that. So we did... Yeah.
It's not necessarily...
Right, no, so in other words, it may well have been Roy, yeah. Void my Ella, and also if you're going to explain the Mishnah that way, what's the Ella? You're saying that both boys and girls inherit Roy just like they inherit Mosek. Ella, and then you're saying, however, there's a difference that you get a double portion from the Nechasim of the father and not the Nechasim of the mother. What does one have to do with the other? Ella Amar Rapapa, Hachik Amar. So no, Rapapa gives a different answer. What the Mishnah means as follows: Echad Aben ve'Echad Abas Noitzun Chelik B'Bechora. That both boys and girls, whichever one is going to be the heir, get the double portion that would have gone to their father. Meaning, in other words, so just like we said with Benoit Slavkot, among the portions that they got was Slavkot or the Bechur, and therefore they get the double portion that should have gone to him from Chayfer and Lefatim. whether Tlachot is left behind boys, or whether as it actually happened, left behind girls, either one gets the Chelek B'chorah, that would have gone to their father.
Either one, boy or girl?
Not that the girl herself was a B'chor, but if her father was a B'chor, and she's the one Yashining because she doesn't have brothers, then she gets his double portion. Okay, again, the problem is Hanami Kanena. Fine, but we learned that in a mission also. Rishahaya, the same mission, it said Rishahaya B'chor, no Yoshnei Chalakim. We said because Tlachot was a B'chor, his daughter has got a double portion from Chayfer and Chassim. And again, my Ella, and also, according to the Papa also, what's the Ella doing over there? What's the connection between the first part and the second part of the Mishnah? Now, why didn't the Papa realize that? So one of the answers that some of the Rishonim say is these answers weren't given in succession. In each yeshiva, each one of the Chachamim gave his own answer. They didn't know what each other had said necessarily. So therefore, so the same question can be asked on all of them. Well, we haven't gotten to it yet. Ella Amar Ravashi. No, so Ravashi says what the Mishnah means is like this: Echad ben ben abonim, whether you have one son among all the other sons, Echad bas ben abonim, or one daughter among all the other daughters, im amar yurash kol mechasai, if the father says that this particular son or this particular daughter should yarishin all of my nechasim, dvarav kayamin, then what he said is valid. Because we're going to learn later, we're going to learn about this later on in the parak. Because since, for example, so he has five sons, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, he decides that only Reuben is going to inherit, for example. Fine, Reuben is a legitimate heir. Therefore, he's able to say that I'm going to give him all of it rather than just some of it.
He can decide
not just for the Bechor, he can decide for anybody.
Any of them?
Yeah, we're going to see later. The problem with that is, come on, so who are you going to say that like? Rabbi Yechon and Membreika? That goes like Rabbi Yechon and Membreika, as we're going to see later on in the parak. However, Hakatani Lola, come on. We don't need to infer that from our Mishnah. The Mishnah clearly says it later. Rabbi Yechon and Membreika, Im Amar Amishiroi Liyoshe. If somebody says this about somebody who's in line to Yarshan him, again, meaning one of his sons, or one of his sons if he has sons, or one of his daughters if he only has daughters, or one of his brothers if he doesn't have sons or daughters. Yeah, the Mishnah said that. Dvar of Kayamin, then what he said is valid. Al Misha Einu Roy LeYosha, but if he says it about somebody who's not in line to Yarshan him, let's say, for example, he has both boys and girls, and he says, I want one of my daughters to Yarshan me, as opposed to all my sons, and Dvar of Kayamin, then what he said is not valid. So we see that Mishnah already says it. We don't need our Mishnah to be telling us that. So you're going to say, okay, maybe our Mishnah wanted to tell us a Sam Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yechon Membreika. And later on, it'll tell us the details.
As opposed to our Mishnah.
Our Mishnah would be the Stam Mishnah. Later on, we'd be saying that's the opinion of Rabbi Yechon Membreika. The problem with that is Stam Ba'achak Machloikas. In that case, it's a Stam Mishnah, our Mishnah, later on a Machloikas on that subject, with Stam Ba'achak Machloikas, Ein Halachas Stam. And we have a usual rule that when you have a Stam Mishnah and then a Machloikas, usually the Halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah.
Machloikas?
Now, in this case, actually, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yechon Membreika. So actually, the Ritva says that's the point of the Gemara's question is, why would we be making this a Stam Mishnah? Then it would contradict the usual rule. Why would we be doing it in that way, to make a Stam Mishnah over here? Later on, have Rabbi Yechon Membreika's opinion, where that would usually imply, the usual rule would be the Halacha is not like him, and here we turn around and say the Halacha is like him. Tosfos also talks about it. So that's the question. That's the question. Why would it be? Tosfos talks about, by the way, the angle that even you could argue that our Mishnah at least implies that it's a rabbin, but still, if you have a machlokas later on, then it means that fine, you had a Stam Mishnah. The halacha is usually not like the Stam Mishnah. Yeah.
Okay. That's why we needed the second.
But then why would we have our Mishnah at all? Yeah. But oid my Ella, and again, you have the question: what is the Ella doing over here in our Mishnah? You're saying a son or a daughter are able to inherit exclusively of their brothers and sisters. However, we're saying a child only gets a double portion from the nechassim of the father and not from the nechassim of the mother. Again, what does one have to do with the other? Elo amar Ma'abir Ravashi hachakama. So Ma'abir Ravashi says, no, what the Mishnah means is like this. Echad aben ve'echad abas shoven b'nichse ha'em v'nichse ha'av. Both boys and girls are equal when it comes to inheriting from the nechassim of the father or the mother. As we learned earlier in the parak, we said that when a father dies, his sons yarshin him if he has sons, his daughters yarshin him if he doesn't have sons. And similarly, when a mother dies, same thing. If her husband is already dead, because he said her husband usually would be the one yarshining her, or whatever. But
dead
But if he's dead or whatever, then her son is yarshin her, and if not, then her daughter is yarshin her. Not like we said over there, we brought over there the opinion of Rav Chaya ben Akasev, who said that when it comes to the nechassim of the mother, they both divided equally, the boys and the girls, but whatever. But whichever, first the boys and then the girls. The same rules that apply to the nechassim of the father apply to the nechassim of the mother. Ella, but there is a difference between the nechassim of the father and of the mother. But the son gets a double portion from the nechassim of the father, or a daughter for that matter. But they don't get a double portion from the nechassim of the mother. Now we understand the Ella. Now we understand the connection between the two clauses of the Mishnah. So they are the same as far as the basic dinim of Yerusha, but not as far as the dinim of the double, not as far as between mother and father, but not as far as the dinim of the double portion between the mother and the father.